Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Esprit Radio.
Welcome to the neighborhood.
That's right. Welcome to our neighborhood. Welcome to Black on Black Crime, our point counterpoint program where we talk issues, news, sometimes we play a game or two, but we don't do crime. If you're not familiar with our program, Black on Black Crime is when black people overtly focus, criticize, or analyze other black people in areas they won't consider anyone else. You can join in on today's topic by calling in or sending your comments in the chat room. With that being said, on with the show.
Welcome, welcome, welcome again to Black on Black Crime. I'm your host, Jerome, and I want to just give a shout-out to all the veterans out there. First of all, I want to say Mr. Ed Sims, who's passed. Happy Veterans Day, and Alan Esprit and Alan Esprit Jr., all of the veterans that have passed. We respect you on this day, so I want to make sure I start off the show with that. I want to thank everyone who's joined us on the program, and remember, you can hit one in your, if you're on the line and you want to join in on the conversation, you're listening to Black on Black Crime, and like I said on the beginning, or at the beginning, this is when black people overtly focus, criticize, or analyze other black people in areas they won't consider anyone else. Now, on this show, Dillard University's president from HBCU, versus music super producer and mogul and icon Andre Young, or Dr. Dre, that's what they call him. We have Decoration Day versus Memorial Day. If you didn't know, Decoration Day is the day that the black folks started that turned into Memorial Day. So I want to talk about that and how we kind of lost sight of that a little bit. And we have a preview of the movie Baggage Claim. I can't remember if I did that last time, you know, the preview of the movie. And so we have some information on that movie. Now, if you missed last week's show, you can catch an archives at espritradio.solasyracuse.com/BOBC. That's Black on Black Crime. espritradio.solasyracuse.com/BOBC. Now, last week, we talked about singer Kelly Rowland versus the music superstar that she is, Beyonce Knowles Carter, and we had rapper-actor Eve Jeffers versus Kanye West, or her issue with black men, as she may have mistakenly just been a little upset or something, but we had that on the last show. We did a profile, since it was his birthday, we did a profile of legendary leader Al-Haj Malik Al-Shabazz. 88th birthday of Malcolm X was last weekend, and that's probably going to come in play to, on today's show with all the stuff that we have lined up for today's show. Before we get started, I kind of like to do a little news, but we're going to bring in Daniel Woodson. What's up, Danny? We're going to bring you in first before I get to all of that stuff. How you doing, man?
Going on. I'm doing all right, Jerome. And I wanted to add something about Memorial Day also to the family members who have also lost loved ones in combat. I mean, that's a sacrifice for them as well. I mean, I know that their loved ones are doing something for the country, but also there's a loss back home here. So I also want to send my condolences out to those who have lost loved ones in combat.
Definitely anybody you know, a neighbor, it affects your families. And so we're going to acknowledge that. I'm going to acknowledge that by doing a whole segment. Decoration Day versus Memorial Day is just not really one against the other, but it's how it morphed into Memorial Day. So I wanted to highlight an article that talks about where it actually came from. And even in that segment, if you can think anybody else that you want to acknowledge, just feel free, Daniel, on that one. But how was your Memorial Day going so far? How was your weekend?
So far, so good. Very relaxed. So, watching little NBA basketball now that they've decided to play them in consecutive days as opposed to 3 and 4 days apart. Scheduling
NBA,
has been awful.
You know the NBA is trying to make some money. I thought you knew.
Obviously, but you know, I just have never seen them go 3 and 4 days between matchups in any particular
I think the playoffs didn't last as long as they wanted them to, right, with the seven games opposed to, you know, going to five games in some of the series. And so they needed to run right up against the WNBA, so it's kind of like their marketing stuff. So
okay.
I think that they manipulate the schedule.
That makes sense from a business standpoint, but not from a fan standpoint. From a fan standpoint, awful. I mean, because you come home, you're thinking, I'm about to watch a game, and nothing. And, of course, they
exactly.
switch up networks like it's nobody's business. If you don't TNT, then it's on ABC, then it's on ESPN.
You definitely have to find the games these days. I have a time with that of trying to figure out, is it on NBA TV, TNT, ABC, what is it, ESPN? It could be anywhere. So, that's what's been up. What's up with my NBA experience. I can never find a game, let alone try to find it on the radio. That may not ever happen. But, by the way, yesterday we also missed Miles Davis' birthday. He was born May 26, 1926, in Alton, Illinois. Dr. Miles Henry Davis and his wife, I can't even remember her name. Good boy, it just left my head. But anyway, Miles Davis was born yesterday, so I wanted to make sure I started off the show with that. You're listening to Black on Black Crime. We like to start off the show with some news information, so we're going to go for that first. President Barack Obama signed a bill last week that awards the Congressional Gold Medal posthumously to four African-American girls killed in the 1963 Birmingham church bombing. The children were murdered when a bomb blew up that was planted by white supremacists and exploded at the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama in September 1963. Not only did the explosion kill those girls, Addie Mae Collins, Cynthia Wesley, Carol Robinson, and Denise McNair, 22 people were injured. So the Congressional Medal of Honor is the highest civilian award given in the United States. So the president gave them that award a few days ago. Now, the National Institute of Health is awarding UCLA a grant to study the genetic cause of autism in African-American children. They're saying there's a void of qualified healthcare officials to make diagnoses in communities like in South Central Los Angeles. So they hope a study will change that. And they aim to recruit at least 600 African-American families who have a child diagnosed with autism. So just wanted to make sure I say that. It's the National Institute of Health. They made the award to UCLA in a grant, so I don't know who's carrying on the study, but it's from them. Also, you know, we don't have Finesse on yet. Finesse will be here in a minute, by the way, Daniel. So just want you to brace yourself.
Oh, man, I'm fine.
Yeah, I talked to him about a half hour ago, so, you know, he's coming in. But, you know, since we do news a little early, we just kind of wanted to get some of the news out of the way and talk about some of the mm-hmm. things that are going on.
Let me add something to the comment about autism. I don't know if you've seen the commercials that Toni Braxton, one of her son, has autism, so she's done public service announcements regarding autism. So at least it's something that's being talked about, and obviously this grant would be nice to actually pinpoint our community, because it is a problem amongst all children. So it's good that we're getting some type of financial assistance to look into the problem in our community.
Yeah. The study out of UCLA, the one thing I did want to say about it, when I read it, now, I have to say I'm always really skeptical of these type of studies, but the study just kind of aims to recruit African-American families if you already have a child diagnosed with autism. So I think they kind of want to monitor the progress, because they're saying that they don't get enough African-American participants in those studies. So, you know, and earlier, I don't know if you caught the news. I don't know if this was even on the news, because we did it on our news show, that the guy who created the ADD medication, he passed
okay.
away last week. But on his deathbed, he admitted that they made it up. Gosh.
What?
It was he was like, there is really no such thing. And on his deathbed, he actually talked about that. It's just kind of a money-making thing for pharmaceutical, because, you know, hyperactivity comes from a bunch of different things. Cut their sugar and all this other stuff. But if we became a society that we kept emphasizing test scores, So we cut out recess, and we cut out gym classes and extracurricular activities because of funding. And you have a bunch of elementary school kids eating sugar during lunch, and then you want to say they have ADD because they can't sit still. I remember they used to turn off the lights and let us put our head down doing Sesame Street and all of that at Electric Company back in the days. But that's just my elementary experience. I'm not putting that on anybody else. But anyway, so the guy who created it and actually named it, coined the term ADD, he said that they made it up. That is just horrible. Oh, isn't that sad?
In capitalism, sometimes you have to create a market, and unfortunately they felt like they had to lie in order to do it.
And that's pretty much why I said that about most things, is when you create the market, then you get to manipulate it. Like, for example, finesse, we'll bring you in a second, finesse, but just like there's a story out about the whole crack baby thing of the 80s. There's a retro report, if you go to their website, that revisits really old stories and see where they're going from, how they played out. And so in that report, one of the authors of the study said that once this woman got arrested for having, for being on drugs, and having a baby when she was on drugs, he knew it went too far. He said, we never expected that to happen. And they found out that the whole scare of our cost and medical going out the roof and all of those things did not happen. So that report came out just to say, we jumped the gun and we're just causing hysteria for no reason. Any premature child is just like any other premature child, and the statistics say that they had the same issues that every other premature child has, not because they had their parent was on drugs. That was pretty much it.
So unfortunate, man.
Let's bring on Finesse. I'm sure Finesse wants to yell about that. What's going on, Finesse?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? Sorry.
What's up, man?
All right.
What's going on?
Sorry I'm late. I just got a phone call to be a host of another radio show here in Baltimore today doing movie reviews. So I jumped at the opportunity, so I'll be doing that. So I apologize to everyone that's listening out there. But, you know, Esprit knows when we get opportunities, we got to take them.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do. But I just warned you on Finesse's reviews. Finesse is not going to like your show if – he left old girl, my bad. I was going to say if she wasn't in it. But I am not going to even say her name. Nope. Not going to say her name.
Nah.
I was going to say he's not going to review your movie unless his girl was in there.
Well,
but we're not.
And as a matter of fact, I am talking about that movie today. One of them this season.
Okay, well, we'll have to deal with that a little bit later. I'm a little scared. Can you tell? I was about to put him on mute.
I could separate myself from I could separate that. So it is what it is. But I do want to comment. It's funny you guys are talking about the ADD thing, and I'll talk about that in a second. Because I just, and it's going to be out this week, I just did an interview with this doctor. He wrote the book Penis Power. And the reason why he wrote it is because the whole industry now, talking about the penis, these drugs that make you last longer and all this other stuff. And it's a book by Dudley Seth Danoff. He's a urologist. And one of the questions I asked him was, and I think it's $10 to $14 billion a year business now. One of the questions I asked him is there any such pill that can make you bigger, harder, whatever? And he said, absolutely not. And he says, these companies, and he said the same thing you said, Esprit, they've made a market. It's become so much in demand and where people believe these myths about the size of your hand, the size of your foot. We've got all these magazines saying, you're telling these women you're throwing happy in bed because you want somebody bigger, longer, stronger. And he said that's not true. He did say, however, that there's three drugs that really do work, but they're kind of dangerous. But he would recommend them as a doctor, depending on your health, and that would be Viagra, Levitra, and Cialis. He says, but there's a lot of things that come with that when you could just do stuff the more natural way and learn more about your body. A lot of people are overweight, have diabetes and all this other stuff, and if they just address their weight issues or their health issues, they can maintain their sex drive. There's foods you can eat to boost your testosterone. So this just goes to show. It's not surprising because I have never believed in ADD, HAD, whatever you call it. I never believe that. Because it's all about getting that kid active in something. They just have a more active level. Getting them active in something. And you hit the nail on the head. When you took gym out of the equation, you've messed it up. Yeah. We've had gym 5 days a week.
Right. And recess. And yeah, you have to run around. Your bodies are not made to stay still, and so you get a lot of health problems from just sitting still. So you have to get out and run.
Wayne got penalized. Yeah, got penalized for not dressing out. So
yeah.
Oh yeah.
Your brain shuts down. You have obesity problems. That's not coming from anything. Yes, people do eat bad, but a lot of it's processed food. But it also comes from. These kids are not getting active, not being active. Don't blame it on the PlayStation and all this other stuff because in the end, it's the parent who still has control.
Oh, by the way, you're listening to Black on Black Crime. You can call in and join us, 909-265-9189. On this show, our main topic today is going to be Dillard University President. Notice how I disrespect him by not saying his name. Dillard University President versus Andre Young or Dr. Dre, the music producer, super producer mogul. Yeah, we have that, and we're going to talk about Decoration Day versus Memorial Day. We're going to start off with that after we take our break, and then we'll talk about some other stuff. But I just wanted to make sure we said that. And like Finesse always reminds me, Black on Black Crime, in case this is your first time here, Black on Black Crime is when black people overtly focus, criticize, or analyze other black people in areas they won't consider anyone else. Now, sometimes we commit justified black-on-black crimes, but we don't know if that's going to happen today. I'm not really sure. Unless...
Oh, it's going to happen. Stop. Let's stop.
Daniel, did you see that coming?
It's
like it's going to happen.
I'm not even going
to. Oh, wait. No, the disclaimer.
For instance, yeah, notice say the name Dr. Boyce Watkins. That's a black-on-black crime.
Say it again for that.
Dr. Boyce Watkins. That's a black-on-black crime.
Just for saying his name?
Just for saying his name, because you know what's about to happen.
You know what? And that's why we're about to take a break, because I know what's going to happen as soon as you say somebody's name that we're going to yell about. All right. Again, call in and join us. This is Black on Black Crime. We'll take a break and come back, and we'll talk about our first topic, which is, you know, we are celebrating Memorial Day, so we're going to talk about Decoration Day, how Memorial Day started, and how it's relevant to the Civil War and all those good things. So after this break, we'll be back with more Black on Black Crime with Finesse, and we have Daniel. We'll be back. All right, fellas, we'll be back in a few.
Moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call or visit fatherhood.gov to learn more.
A Volvo isn't for everyone. We kind of like it that way. The Volvo XC60. Designed for real people. Designed around you.
Dove Men Plus Care presents How to Stay in Shape. Step one. Gotta work those arms.
How was it?
Good. Step two. Keep those legs strong. Step three, don't forget your back. Dove Men Plus Care. Care for what matters.
Welcome back to Black on Black Crime. This is a show where we just cut up a little bit. Not too much mess, but we have Daniel on the line. What's up, Daniel?
Yeah, I'm listening to my girl, that's all.
You know, Vanessa, I have to bring Daniel in first every time we play Maya, just kind of out of respect.
he can have Maya. She know what time it is.
Okay. All right. Don't make me put you both on mute. Okay. Now, on this segment, we have Decorations Day versus Memorial Day. Now, Ben Becker wrote this article about a year ago on how Memorial Day was stripped of its African-American roots over the course of the Civil War, by the way. More than 200,000 African-Americans served or blacks served in the military branches of the Union military. I don't know how many were on the Confederate side. But and black soldiers, by the way, was initially paid $7 a month against the white soldiers, $13 a month. All right, just had to throw a couple of facts before I start this. Now, Memorial Day began as Decoration Day in the immediate aftermath of the Civil War. Now, it was a tradition initiated by former slaves to celebrate the emancipation and commemorate those who died for that cause. These days, Memorial Day is arranged as a day without politics, a general patriotic celebration of all soldiers and veterans, regardless of the nature of the wars or the ones that they participated in. Now, this was the opposite of how that day emerged, with explicit partisan motives to celebrate those who fought for justice and liberation. The concept that the population must remember the sacrifice of U.S. service members without a crucial reflection on the wars themselves did not emerge by accident. It came about in the Jim Crow period as the Northern and Southern's ruling classes sought to reunite the country around apolitical mourning, which required erasing the divisive issues of slavery and black citizenship. Of course, these issues had been at the heart of the struggles of the civil rights and Reconstruction. So as the Civil War came to close in April of 1865, Union troops entered the city of Charleston, where 4 years prior to the war beginning, white residents had largely fled the city. Black residents of Charleston remained, and they celebrated and welcomed the troops. When the 21st Colored Infantry came in, they celebrated on May 1st, 1865. It was the first Decoration Day, which later became Memorial Day. Now, Yale University historian David Blight retold the story in his award-winning book, Race and Reunion, The Civil War of American Memory. It was in 2001 is when he wrote it. He explained how these overall visions of the Civil War memory collided during the decades after the war. Now, during the final years of the Civil War, the Confederates had converted the Planters' Horse Track, Washington Race Course, and Jockey Club to an outdoor prison. Now, Union soldiers were kept in horrible conditions in the interior of the track. At least 257 died of exposure and disease and were hastily buried in mass graves behind the grandstand. Now, some 28 black workmen went on the site, reburied the Union dead properly, and built a high fence around the cemetery. Later on, they whitewashed the fence and built an archway over the entrance, and it was inscribed saying, "Martyrs of the Race Course," is what it was called. It wouldn't tell you what it was. Then the black Charlestonians, in cooperation with some white missionaries and teachers, staged an unforgettable parade of 10,000 people on the slaveholders' race course. That's according to the New York Tribune, a correspondent that witnessed the event, describing it as a procession of friends and mourners of South Carolina, and the biggest one that they ever saw before. That's according to the New York Tribune. Now, at 9 a.m. May 1st, the procession stepped off led by 3,000 black schoolchildren carrying armloads of roses and singing John Brown's Body. The children were followed by several hundred black women with baskets of flowers, wreaths, and crosses. Then came black men marching in cadence, following by a contingency of Union infantry and other black and white citizens. As many as possible gathered in the cemetery enclosure, a children's choir sang, "We rally around the flag, the Star-Spangled Banner," and several spirituals before the black ministers read scriptures. I wanted to make sure I did the story and kind of did it right before I brought you guys back in. But it was something that I did not know about Memorial Day that I thought kind of leads to why we have bad misinformation so much, that we didn't know that Memorial Day is not about being apolitical. It's about understanding why your family, friends, and neighbors died at war. You need to understand what those wars were about. I'll let you start off, Vanessa.
You know, I'm neutral when it comes to politics and holidays, but that is a good piece of history. So, you know, every week, you know, Esprit finds something to give you history-wise. So that's a great history lesson right there.
Now, Daniel, do you want to make any comments on it? I just wanted to give out the information to make sure that people know.
Yeah, it's just so unfortunate that things like this aren't taught in the mainstream. I mean, because here you had a bunch of children and a bunch of African-Americans who were paying homage to the army or the soldiers who were responsible for, in effect, eventually liberating them. And, of course, you had Abraham Lincoln and the Emancipation Proclamation, but we still had to win the war. So they were showing homage to these soldiers, and it's not something that's talked about, unfortunately. I wish it were,
right,
but I'm glad we're at least talking about it now.
Well, you know, the reason that this story kind of sticks with me is because, you know, I'm a big history person, and this is not politics at all. Like, this is just not political. It's just kind of history. And what happened?
It's a history lesson, which, you know, we are in our 40s, and I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. History is a really funny thing, right? History can hurt your feelings, right? You can get to a point where you can find out something you didn't know, and it just shakes your core. It's kind of like knowing that Christmas was another celebration that was, you know, that people who chose to worship Jesus kind of celebrated on the same day, so they didn't know that they were celebrating, you know, religion. So Christmas is not the day that Jesus was born. Go ahead.
Yeah, pagan. And, you know, you talk about that. You know, a lot of people get upset when you talk about that. Yeah.
Well, Jesus was born in September.
Yeah,
right? Jesus isn't born in the winter.
Yeah.
But
logic leads you to understand that. If you understand that time, that climate, where it is over there, you do your history lesson, you'll know it's a pagan ritual, the sun god. But people want to take these holidays and be part of them just because.
Well, you know, I'm really like, and again, this is probably for me from just doing so much history, but I even don't like that description of the sun god worship stuff, because you still have to remember that Moses and Jesus kind of grew up in that area, and they said God of the sun, which means God controls everything, the water, the sun. So they wasn't really praying to them as deities like that. I think that was a part of the whitewash of that culture when you brought them to religion to kind of conquer them.
But they didn't participate in that, and that was the other part of that. It was the other cultures around them,
But what I'm saying is that when you look at early Kemet, just for reference, when you look at early Kemet, it is characterized in a way that makes you believe one thing or the other. So what I'm saying is, like, reading about the Dark Ages. You know what the Dark Ages was? During the 700 years that the Moors ran Europe, when the Moors were in Spain. So since black people ran it, it's called the Dark Ages. Nobody really thinks about that, but when they say we don't have any history, but we have history before and after, how come 700 years you don't have history? Because black people were the Moors were there. So it's not the Dark Ages because people were walking around crawling on the ground. It was because Europeans weren't writing history, and that is a big chunk that's left out. So when we start talking about history, by the way, it's one of those things that the deeper you go down the rabbit hole to read history, the more it kind of uncovers the, you know, kind of misinformation of everybody. It's not to get mad at. It's just kind of one of those things that when you find out, what are you going to do with it? That's the point that I was making. Not to get back.
And you know what? And that's very important. When people find out the truth, what do they do with it?
Yeah, because I've heard Dark Ages for years and never looked into why it was called the Dark Ages.
Why it was called
Dark Ages. A lack of enlightenment or a dead period in history. And now this bombshell.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know that during that 700 years of ruling Spain for the Moors is when the United States, I guess this west coast that they bought from the Spanish in, you know, during the time Mexico had it, it was run by the Spanish in Florida. The Moors were running Spain at that time. So it kind of looks kind of weird to say, if the Moors are running Spain during the time that America was being set up, that seems kind of strange to me. But yeah, just run the dates and it looks exactly the same. You're listening to Black on Black Crime. Go ahead.
Well, you know what? I just want to add this. It's no different when we read our history books or our kids read our history books in school, and they may get like, one, Christopher Columbus, who did not discover America. You can't discover something that was already discovered. But they make it seem like no one else was here.
All right.
Well, they were all savages.
Right. You know, and we take it and we run with it and we don't correct it. And I've seen throughout the years where a lot of, you know, parents who teach their kids, you know, to reaffirm history with them, especially when you come from somewhere else, Black, Latinos, Asians, they teach history and say, hey, we did contribute, those that really do take a part in their children's education. And I've seen stories where kids go to school and correct the teachers, and these kids get expelled. So it's like, what do you do with truth when you get it? How much longer are you going to keep, blinding folks to the truth?
Well,
and women too, because the only thing you talk about women, when you talk about women, they contribute to history, but you only hear stories of Norma Rae.
Now, here is the thing about school, and I would not like to mislead anybody on this, but the trick of school is this, is that most of the history that you find out in life comes outside of school. I didn't learn any of that stuff in college either, like from elementary, junior high, college, none of that. So you're not taught that. It's Carter G. Woodson, the father of Black History Week or Black History Month is what we call it. He said that there's two educations, one that somebody else give you and one that you give yourself, but the one that you give yourself lasts longer and is more important. So you have to almost seek information. It's not someone else's responsibility. School technically teaches you critical thinking skills on how to learn, but you almost have to tell people of color that you're going to be lied to because it's really hurtful. So you think if your teacher says that Christopher Columbus discovered America and you read the book, that's what you have to put as your answer. It may not be true, but you have to regurgitate what you read. It'll stop them from failing school.
And I give those parents who tell their child to put the truth down there and then challenge that because it's a lie. But I want to add this, and it's probably going to be a black-on-black crime. This is why I don't like when people of color say, I don't need to learn anymore. Because you should constantly want to learn and grow as a person. So when you say you don't want to learn anymore, like what if we didn't want to learn anymore? You brought us with a history fact that I didn't even know. Now I'm going to do some research. You see what I'm saying? So you should always want to grow and become better.
Are you saying you about to check me? Did you just
No. What we tell people, just because, and we haven't said this in a minute, but it's just because we bring something to the table, that doesn't mean you're supposed to not look it up. You're supposed to research it for your own to make sure it's the truth. Just because I say I'm great, that doesn't mean it's necessarily true. It is. You don't have to research that, but the thing.
But there's no economy because everything's at your fingertips. I mean, you can get a plethora of information now. You don't have to go to the library. It's online.
White people, you can't keep blaming a white man for you not learning because you got a library.
Oh, here you go.
Card.
You're about to get muted for that one. You can
and
blame
you got
them.
Internet.
Stop that.
I'm just saying what black folks say. They always blaming somebody.
Stop that. But people are holding you down. It's a systemic problem, so we're not going to let anybody off the hook either.
There's no doubt. And we'll talk about that with Tiger Woods.
All right. We sure will. All right. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Black on Black Crime on Esprit Radio. We'll come back after this really quick break with our main topic.
My relationships have never been cleared for takeoff, but at least I'm not the only one in my family not to be married.
We have some news.
I'm engaged.
I can't go to my real sister's wedding single.
If you need a man, honey, I can get you one of those.
It's not a man I need, it's a husband or a potential husband in a month.
Why don't you marry Gail? If she goes a week without waxing her mustache, they'll think it's Steve Harvey.
Look, it's not like she's got enough time to meet somebody new, so why not revisit somebody else?
For the next few weeks, any of your exes that flies anywhere at any time, we're going to know.
That's right. There's Tanya in ticketing.
Calvin at curbside check-in.
And there's Cedric in security.
Take everything out your pocket. I need your pockets out your pockets.
Got 30 days and 30,000 miles.
I want you to have these cranberry flavored for the holidays.
One of your exes is on a flight from Los Angeles to Houston.
Montana.
Thanksin.
Montana.
Curtis. So life is big
as I can. This is juicy. Sorry, she's jealous.
You need to be a JFK in an hour.
I am not going over to that man's house.
You know how crazy that would make me look?
Hello?
Are you nuts?
Hello?
Montana Moore.
Damon Diesel. Wow. You're doing well for yourself.
Damon?
Who is that?
Damon!
This ain't my house. It's hers. I can't afford this.
Damn door!
She crazy.
Open, open. Open, open, open!
So she crazy. Crazy, she crazy.
You spent your whole life being your own woman. Why you want to change now?
I just would really like to be somebody else's too.
Now is not the time to get down on yourself, Montana. In a week, maybe.
When you find love, and you will, don't ever let it go.
Honey, what are you doing?
He just wanted international travel booty.
That man could have had intergalactic travel booty.
Nobody move! I have no life, which gives me all day to ruin yours!
Welcome back to Black on Black Crime. I'm your host, Jerome. You can join in 909-265-9189. That's 909-265-9189. If you're already on the line, hit 1. We'll bring you in if you have any questions or comments on this program. We just finished up with our topic of, I can't even think of what the name of it is just right now. Memorial Day versus Commemoration Day, I think is what it's called. But we'll get back to that. What's going on?
What are you
going to
learn today?
You know I had to start with that, right? This is going to be another open letter day, I can tell. Because we're starting off with an open letter. That is how that goes. And you know where our open letter is coming from. It's the Dr. Dre story. Now, here's our main topic for the day. Dillard University president versus Andre Young or Dr. Dre. Now, Dillard's president, Walter M. Kimbrough, wrote an op-ed in the L.A. Times questioning the contributions to UCLA from music producer, super producer mogul Andre Young, or a.k.a. Dr. Dre, from the group N.W.A. back in the day. Good Lord, I didn't know I was rhyming today. All right, so now Kimbrough said, as one of the first university presidents from the hip-hop generation, I had to stop and read the story immediately when he saw that $70 million was coming to UCLA from Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine, who both co-owned Beats Audio. If you didn't know, he co-owns Beats, right? And so he said, I understand their need to build a pool of skilled talent, which is the main purpose of the grant. He said, I understand their need to build skilled talent, but there's, how can I put this? Wait a minute. Let me make sure I have the story correctly. All right. He understood the need to build a pool of skilled talent, but why USC? Iveen's daughter is an alumni, sure, and he just gave the commencement address. Andre Young, before he was Dr. Dre, grew up in nearby Compton, where he rose to fame as part of the rap group N.W.A. The Beats headquarters are on L.A.'s west side. He said, still, what if Dre had given $35 million, his half of that USC gift, or about 10% of his wealth, according to Forbes? They ain't have to shout him out like that. I think that's a black-on-black friend. And to an institution that enrolls the very people who supported his career from the beginning. He should have gave it to somebody else. An institution where the majority of students are low income, a place where $35 million would have represented a truly transformative gift. Now, he said USC is a great institution, no question, but it has a $3.1 billion endowment, the 21st largest in the nation, by the way, and much of that money, much more than every other black college. That's all of them combined, by the way. Less than 20% of USC's student body qualifies for federal Pell Grants, given to students for low-income families, by the way, compared to two-thirds of those enrolled in black colleges. USC has also seen a steady decrease in the black student enrollment, which is now below 5%. Now, before we even go any farther, let me bring in Daniel first, because I know we're going to yell about this, but I just want to ask you, Daniel, what do you think about Dillard University's president coming at Dr. Dre about, I don't care how much statistics that he runs off about USC and why they should or should not be getting money, but his calling out Dr. Dre for giving money to USC. What do you think about that?
Well, first of all, it's his money. He can do what he wants to. He's from the L.A. area, so, I mean, he's giving back to a home university, so I can understand where he's going. We typically say it's incumbent on us as African Americans to try to give back. So in the case, this would be a perfect opportunity for him to give back, maybe to something in the community per se, and not necessarily just to the university. So, I mean, I'm kind of torn on it, but I mean, it's his money, so I mean, he can do whatever he wants.
Well, and that is the main point, but it's just from him calling Dre out was kind of my problem in the whole.
Well, I mean, we always have somebody who wants other African-Americans a means to do more for our community, and it's really the only way that we're going to actually, quote-unquote, come up is if we do give back. So, I mean, I think it's something that needs to be talked about, and maybe the next African-American who wants to make a grant will think first about, okay, well, could this be better served for our community or for my community than to give it to someone who already has $3 billion in their endowment. So it definitely will raise the consciousness of African Americans. So, I mean, yeah, go ahead, call them out.
All right, okay. So, Fidesz, what do you think about it? See, the only reason I'm laughing, you know I'm going to disagree with that, because I, you know, going to private schools, I'm not going to name the colleges I've gone to, but let's just say this. If I decide to build a library or any of them pieces, it is my business. Nobody calls you when you're broke, but when your butt hits the lotto, everybody act like they're your friend and like you have an obligation. But when Dre got kicked up out of death row or whatever, he was having his hardships, I didn't see nobody from a black college say, you should enroll in our institution to get your education. Ain't nobody offer that kid no hand. But as soon as they see some money, oh, my gosh, he should be doing A, B, and C, and D. So I have a bigger issue than that. But instead of me ranting, let me go to Fidesz. You're
okay.
Up, because I'm going to commit my crime a little later.
All right. And I'm going to try to be as serious as possible. But I am about to go off. I'm going to give everybody the forewarning now. I'm not going to go off on Dre because it is his right. I understand he lives there. He cares about USC. I believe in a couple of videos they rock USC gear. I don't have a problem with him giving back. That's his
community.
That is. That's his community.
The camp,
but I
the
will,
camp is near
but
where
I,
he grew up.
Where he grew up. But I will say this, and I've been saying this for years. These guys that get these, you know, white managers, white sports agents, you guys need to take more of your career and donate
and look at donating money in your communities, not always doing what they want to do or for their buddies. That's the only thing I would say that I would like for Dre. And of course, could he said, okay, I'm going to take $25 million and put it with USC and take another $10 million there. Of course he could have. But it's his money, and I'll go that way. My biggest complaint is to this letter-writing dude, this campus villain. Let me explain something to you, homeboy. As SB already said, you guys wasn't checking for Dre until he started giving out money. You guys don't check for anybody unless they're giving out money. HBCUs, and I'm not going to say all of them, but I have to put everybody together because it's a majority of them. You guys are waiting for handouts. You're not trying to create no revenue. I see other colleges creating revenue. You guys waiting for either President Obama, President Bill Clinton, Bush to throw some money. You want Dr. Dre to give you some money. I see you haven't asked Nas to be on the campus, but Nas has been asked by so many different universities up here. You haven't asked Jay-Z. Jay-Z's been asked the same thing. But you guys want handouts. You want a handout, that means you have to do something in the community, and you're not. And here's another thing HBCUs. Again, not all of them, but the majority of them. You guys are doing nothing to advertise. I didn't know anything about Dillon until today, and I know HBCU. I didn't know anything about Dillon until I read the story. So are you even advertising? Are you even actively recruiting? Are you even actively coming out of the East Coast and trying to recruit kids that are trying to go to college? See, that's the thing that gets me. You want handouts, and the only thing you're doing is looking at it as a business for you, but you're not trying to market and promote your university. Anything at all, but you want Dr. Dre to give up his money, and that's not fair. And I think that's wrong. And Dr. Dre, do whatever you want to do with your money. And as far as anybody else, like the superstar you out there, think about doing stuff with sickle cell. Think about doing stuff with autism. Just think about your foundations as well, not just everybody else. And that's my two cents.
And I have to say, it's not that we know that he's not doing anything for anybody else. You
right.
just saw
he
what he did for them, and now that's a problem for you.
Right.
Right? You don't know them, so you're going to critique them. So here's my thing. Oh, well, let me say this last part. In the last part of what his open letter was, he said, a new report on black male athletes and racial inequities show that 2.2% of USC undergrads are black compared with 56% of his football and basketball teams, one of the largest disparities in the nation. And given that USC's $45,602 tuition next year, I'm confident Dre could have sponsored multiple full-ride scholarships to black colleges, to private black colleges, for the cost of one at USC.
Wait a minute. He had enough to say that. Isn't that your job as far as recruiting? What's your recruiting budget? Why somebody else got to do your job?
By talking
for you?
About Dr. Dre?
Yeah.
Talk about Dr. Dre as his recruiting budget. I mean,
Dr. Dre and his recruit. Wait a minute. Did you give Dr. Dre an honorary degree?
No. Okay, so here's my point. Now, here's my two cents on the whole thing. If Andre Young, now imagine, here's what's going on. There are four schools that are being created in the name of Dre, right? So there's a graphics and design, so if you get a degree, it may be from the Andre Young School of Graphics and Design. There's a technology one. There's an entertainment or it's a music curriculum. So I can't think of what it's called. It's an arts. I'm sorry. It's arts, and there's another one. I can't think of another one right off the top of my head. But if you can imagine what C. Dolores Tucker and all of those folks would have done back in the days if somebody from NWA Ice Cube had a scholarship at Prairie View, it'd have been the Ice Cube. They've been like, y'all misogynistic towards women. Like they would have ran the gamut on why they shouldn't take their money because it's dirty money because of what they do in the community. So you can be judgmental of these guys all day until they give money to a white university that didn't judge them for it. His name's going on the building. It is going on people's diplomas. Now, if he did that at a black school, I guarantee you our philosophical conversation would be about, do you want your daughter with his name on her degree? We get so twisted over money that is a problem. So that technically is a black-on-black crime from me saying that. I know Finesse committed a couple by going off on HBCUs, but Daniel's the only one that kept it sane today and not not gone
well,
there. But
I, wait
to
a minute,
my point.
I said not all. I said the majority, not all. So I didn't
commit
crimes.
The majority.
Because it is.
I have no proof, but.
Listen, I deal with HBCUs. I deal with them. I ain't telling you nothing.
Don't.
I deal with them. And I'm trying to get them
Well, Finesse, tell me, what is the issue with HBCUs if they're not handling their business then?
They want people to do the work for them. A lot of them get comfortable in their positions, and they fine. They check with that. And that's cool if you want to do that. But if you're supposed to be marketing your school, your job is to recruit students. You're in the business of education and business. And you're not making money. There's a lot of internal issues going on in HBCUs, and it's sad. It's sad. So now you sit around here, instead of being happy for a young man who came up, no matter how he came up, doing something positive, he's a great marketing force, he's done commercials, he's done movies, he's made
But we're talking about this is a business
things.
School. This is a business school. Because it's all curved into his Beats Audio, right? So they're brand marketing. They're creating employees for the future. So they partner with UCLA because Beats is headquartered near UCLA.
Right.
So let's go that route first.
And then trying to say, you know what? We ain't never think about this. Why don't we hook up? I mean, you're not hooking up with anybody. You want to hook up, but you're not hooking up with anybody. And I'm not going to throw – now, if I start throwing big HBCUs underneath the bus because there's some stuff I do know, then that would be a black-on-black crime. And I know I've got some
and don't do that.
The show, so I'm not going to do that. But they know. They know it's the truth. I bet you won't have one calling here and say otherwise.
Let me help out with – since you mentioned that they reach out, and the president has done his part to some degree, right? We have – the $28.5 million that went to Morgan State from NASA. It was the largest in that school's 144-year history. The president also created an initiative for HBCUs. It's called it was an executive order, actually, the Historical Black College and University Promoting Excellence in Innovation Sustainability. He helped them. The initiative works with the executive departments, agencies, and offices, and private sectors, helping the market foster private sector public initiatives for public-private partnership and dissemination of information. They're saying they're not getting information out. The president has also, in this executive order, outlined the quality of information shared between the administrative and the programmatic practices of the HBCU communities that benefits everybody, and also they gave them loans, and I mean not loans, but they gave them a grant to explore new ways of improving relationships with them and the federal government. So the president did that in 2009. That's how long ago that was, and those grants are still there. So the government has kind of kicked in too. Everybody criticizes the president. And they ask him what he does for HBCUs and all this, but they don't know that this executive order was a while ago.
They still ask. There was an article. I didn't send it to you because I got tired of it. They still criticize him because he's not doing enough. They say he's not doing enough for HBCU. What are the HBCUs doing for self? We have a division among HBCUs. The ones on the East Coast think they're better than ones in the Midwest.
Oh well,
you know
we can't stop that. That's a whole nother show.
This is what I'm talking about. Daniel asked, I'm giving an answer, and that stuff has to stop us. We can't keep asking for handouts. What is your alumni doing?
Right, and now so my answer to your question, Daniel, would be it is the alumni outreach stuff that you need to be concerned about with your endowments, and so I know. Bill and Camille Cosby gave the largest amount of money to any HBCU ever. They gave money to Spelman. I think they gave about $25 million or $28 million to Spelman. And, you know, Puffy gave $500,000 to Howard. He went to Howard. And so people trickle in. I shouldn't say trickle. Well, see, I can't criticize, but he went there.
I can't.
So whatever his experience is, his experience. So just Dre's is the highest ever at $35 million. But, again, who's to say where anybody should or should not spend their money? Because
Dre's was $35 million.
Yeah. I thought I said that. His is $35 million. So the trick is that how do you do a story about what somebody else should do with their money because they're black? The name of the show is Black on Black Crime, because that would be the over criticizing or analyzing black people in areas you don't consider anybody else. When Bill Gates gives money, he just gives money. When I can't think of the other guy's name, but when any of those guys give money, nobody says anything. I was going to say Warren Buffett is who I was thinking of.
Yeah. Did you mute me?
Excuse me?
Oh, I thought you muted. Which is, I was like, did he just mute me?
And he's like, I didn't even do anything to deserve that one. All right.
What did I do?
He didn't even come close this time, right? All right, you're listening to Black on Black Crime. We're talking about Dillard University's president talking about the gift that Dr. Dre gave to UCLA. I have some internet comments, by the way, on this. And one says, how about giving equal coverage to those blacks who have made fortunes by exploiting their black constituency? No, he's talking about politics. He said, look at cities like St. Louis and all of those guys. How about the drama at HBCUs? This is a black-on-black crime because he's calling out TSU. But he said, we have become our greatest enemy, but who is reporting that? Leave Dr. Dre alone. I am sure our misuse and exploitation of one another was a factor in his decision-making. He was saying that he slighted them on purpose. I'm not even going to go that far
to that comment.
Yeah, because I wouldn't say he did
that. That's going too far.
Yeah. Now, another one said, this one's interesting, says, are you kidding me? When Dre dropped the groundbreaking NWA album, N-Word with an Attitude, well, that's what their name is.
That's the name of the group.
He said their album, N-Word with Attitude. But anyway, every educated black person you can get on record thought the music was bad for the black community and wanted nothing to do with it. And Dr. Dre, but now he's financially supporting the sources that supported him when he needed, like the white educators who widely considered it brilliant work. Black schools and black scholars had a problem. They did really have a bad problem with it. And I don't know that difference between saying that white folks liked it. I mean, it sold a ton, but I don't know about all that.
there is actually a study on NWA, either at USC or UCLA. But the
one of them did a curriculum on it.
Yeah. And this is why, because the first two albums were very Black Panther-esque, because I listened to those first two albums, and what they were talking about Mark Furman before O.J. Simpson. Yeah, all of this. They were talking about, and they gave us, as Chuck D said, he said they were the reporters for the West Coast because we had no idea what was happening over there.
Mm-hmm.
No idea.
Now, I remember.
I remember why Chuck D hooked up with Ice Cube.
Yeah, when he came to the East Coast. You know, the funny thing about that, I remember saying the lyrics to my uncle of F the Police, because I remember how disturbed they were about it. And I was just saying, and I was explaining to him from the song's perspective, he's saying, messing with me because I'm a teenager with a little bit of gold in a pager kind of thing is just kind of them saying, this don't make any sense that you singling me out, right? And so I kind of went through the lyrics of that song with him and said, get over the cursing. It is the point that they're making. And the points were actually correct, right? So as we see
that. If you go back and you listen to Express Yourself, that's a beautiful record because that's telling you, with yourself. And people don't understand that. They're just, they jumped on it. Now, you know, the controversy happened after those first two albums, in my opinion, the direction they were going in, and that's why Cube left. And you can actually hear what Cube wanted to do if you listen to Burn, Hollywood Burn. I think that's the Lethal Injection album. He hooked up with Public Enemy, Big Daddy Kane, and they had a message to say. And that's how I always looked at N.W.A. They were the first two albums. They had a message to tell. They were no different from Public Enemy to me or KRS-One. they were on that level that represented the West Coast. And we didn't. And then if they never came out, because they changed the game and they brought the West Coast, if it wasn't for Dre, we would have never known a lot of this stuff that was happening.
Well, again, even from the music side to his Beats audio to some of the other stuff that he's done, just producing, he has success in his own right. He didn't need to. I'm not sure that anybody can claim that they helped him on his success, right? He probably had to put a lot of work in a dark room by himself. And so when he did that,
and bought millions of dollars and messing with the wrong people.
Hey. Well, but still, again, you know, he put Eminem on, who signed 50 Cent, so you can see where all that money is.
Uh-huh.
Yep. So here's another internet comment. One says, I'm sick of this whole discussion. I am a USC alumni, so I have to admit I have a bias, but nonetheless, here it goes. Dr. Dre didn't give the money to USC's general endowment. He endowed a specific degree program. The money will be put into a trust with a number of rules and regulations tied to how it can be used, and it will be managed alongside of the school's endowments, but it will not go to the general fund of expenses. Furthermore, the programs that this degree brings together are all ranked top 10 or top 30 nationally among schools. HBCU alumni don't donate at the same level USC alumni do in terms of the percentage of alumni that give. Not talking about dollars. He said, why don't the HBCU presidents write op-eds about their alumni? HBCUs play a critical role, but how can you criticize Dr. Dre when alumni don't donate to your financial house and your financial house isn't in order? Now that was
enough said.
I think that was a good one to end it on, wasn't it?
Nothing to say after that.
Hey, I'm through. Anybody, Daniel, Vanessa,
that was quite the touche.
Exactly, that was quite the comment. Hey, on that note, you're listening to Black on Black Crime. We're here every Monday, 2 o'clock, even on the holidays. You're here with Daniel and Vanessa and Jerome. I'm your host.
This is a story about BK from BK. Bernard King from Brooklyn, New York. It's 1984, the garden is packed, and I'm sitting in the last row. I mean, I could touch the roof. And Bernard King, he was giving the Nets the business. 10, 20, 40 points. Second half, 50, 60 points. He was stopping and popping, posting and toasting. All hail the King. Now, you know what? You never know who's going to wear the crown next.
Before the sneeze, help protect with a spray. Before the tissue, help defend with a wipe. Before the cold and flu season, help prevent with Lysol. Because when you have 10 times more protection with each hand wash and kill 99.9% of germs around the house with each spray, those healthy habits start to add up. This season, a good offense is the best defense. And Lysol has your family covered, because that's our mission for health.
Let's go into our news and entertainment. First in our news, I want to say this is a story. when I think about this, because this would be a black-on-black crime, as we always think about vandalism and stuff when it comes to black folks and, you know, how come y'all can't keep this, you know, stuff straight and all this. Now, in Egypt, there were some Chinese students that went in to visit, you know, Egypt and see the pyramids and all this other stuff. Now, a Chinese teenager vandalized one of the ancient Egyptian artworks that led to a wave of anger amongst China's internet users. Now, this microblogger posted a photo of the graffiti at the Luxor temple complex saying that, now this is what it said, Deng Zhong was here. It was written in Chinese on like the, in one of the temples, by the way. The 15-year-old boy from China. The name and the date of his birth was posted, and his school was posted online. Now, his parents have apologized to the local paper saying they're sorry about his actions. China, to the Chinese media, said that Luxor, which if you don't know, on the banks of the Nile, is the home of, there's the home to the largest temple complex built by Imhotep III, who lived in the 14th century BC, and later by Ramses II. So just so that you know how old it was that this guy carved his name in, the graffiti was found carved into this ancient stone by a tourist named, well, we won't say his name, who visited Luxor about 3 weeks ago. Now, his mother said, we want to apologize to the Egyptian people and the people who have paid attention to the case across China. Now, she's not apologizing to anybody, but she's saying, if you heard of this, we apologize to you. That was just kind of crazy. She added that the teen, not, who's now in middle school, committed the act, and he was, when he was younger, this was 3 weeks ago when they found out, and had realized the seriousness of his actions. Now, his father appealed to the public, saying, this is too much pressure for him to take. Can you imagine your child tore something up that was thousands, 14th century, and said, hey, hey, don't pressure him too much. He already said he was sorry. So, China actually released, the government released a statement because they're saying that their Chinese travel all over the place, and they're saying they're getting a bit out of hand on the tourism stuff, and they're going to start suspending passports because of people just tearing up when they go to other countries. That seems weird, right? That you would think that that would be a U.S. Issue. That's not why. Oh, yeah, that's true. Now, Egyptian ministry, the minister of antiquities, was quoted by saying the damage to the temple was superficial. He did carve it with a rock. He did scar it. And the measures will be taken to restore it, is what he said. Just wanted to share that news story before we got started into some of the entertainment. Now, Russell Simmons signed a 2-year first look deal with HBO. HBO has the first right of refusal to Russell's projects and whatever he's proposing for development. And if HBO, after their first look, isn't interested and declines, he can offer it up to other networks. But that happened this week. He signed a deal with HBO, just so that you know. And for those people who have Blu-ray, next Friday is set to be released on Blu-ray. Don't know why. Opposed to Friday, which was released in 2009, but next Friday is released in September if you want that a part of your collection. Oh, before I forget this one, I don't know if you guys heard about Chris Rock's upcoming drama comedy called Finally Famous, but Rosario Dawson is one of the female leads in this. I think she's playing his mistress, and Gabrielle Union has joined the cast, signed up to play his beautiful, glamorous, and expensive wife. Like her, she's a popular reality TV star and Chris Rock's fiance in this movie. And so he wrote it, and he's directing it.
What happened to the movie? What happened to the show she was supposed to have on HBO? I mean, BET.
Oh, it's coming out. I think it premieres next week with the season finale of The Game, but it's going to be a 1-hour full version of it. It's Being Mary Jane is what it's called.
So
and,
it got canceled,
but
she's going to be in another show.
No. This is a movie.
Oh, it's a movie. I thought it was a show.
Yeah, her character is a reality show star. Like, they're calling it a drama, like a drama comedy, but Chris Rock wrote this movie, and they finally just cast it came out today that the cast, Gabriel Union, he's like a recovering alcoholic, and he owes his sobriety to his fiance, who's Gabriel Union. Her character is eager to be more famous, tries to convince Chris Rock to get married on her show, and Rosario Dawson plays a journalist assigned to interview Rock's character for the New Yorker magazine, described as a former party animal who is now sober and committed, and in a committed relationship, but the sparks fly as she interviews Chris Rock. So it's kind of a love triangle between Chris Rock, Rosario Dawson, and Gabrielle Union. That's really believable. But no black on black crime there. This is according to the rap. That was sarcastic.
Comment. I heard your comment.
Okay.
Black on black crime. So just saying, Chris Rock ain't fine enough to have those two women? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying I am. See, I'm not saying jack about him. See, because that would be a black on black crime. I have to put him out of that.
Uh-huh.
Malika Rock is pretty. His wife is pretty. I had no doubt. Much respect to Chris.
We ain't talking about his wife. We talk about the comment you just said.
I was being a little jealous because it was Rosario. Because you know, back in the day, I thought she was pretty. She's okay now, but I'm just saying. Rosario, call us 909-265-9189. And we know Gabrielle tied up with Dwayne Wade.
Call my cell phone, 443.
Whatever. Hey, no. You might get put on mute. Hold on, let me put him on mute for it so you don't get this. By the way, when you listen to this in the archives, you'll hear a long beep through Finesse's number. All right. So Finesse wanted to talk about, while we were at it, he wanted to talk about Tiger Woods and I can't remember the guy, Garcia. Who's the golfer?
Sergio Garcia.
Whoa.
Okay. So here's the story. Sergio Garcia. Let me start on the first one. While they were playing in the, it was the Players. I don't know why I keep thinking that. Well, while they were actually playing golf, Sergio said that he didn't want to be golf partners with Tiger because he's not the nicest person in the world. Now, Sergio has had problems with he disliked Tiger for a long time. And then he comes back after he says that, and he's almost tied for the lead or something. He hits a couple of balls in the water. People started cheering because he missed, and he said he thought he was a victim because of his rants against Tiger Woods, and everybody was cheering for Tiger and not for him.
Well, wait a minute.
A victim.
Let's put it all in perspective because you missed an important part.
Okay.
They didn't want to play together. And then when they were on the golf course, they were together on the golf course. Pay attention. Keep up.
Okay.
They were on the golf course together.
I was watching it.
So was I. Sergio hit a shot. He claims that Tiger took his club out of the bag before he hit his shot and messed up his shot.
No,
that was the day before, though. Right. But
yeah,
that was the day before.
He
and then Sergio made his comments in the news, in the press. They were going back and forth with the comments. The last day.
Are you messing up my timeline?
No. You forgot that whole part of the timeline.
No. Okay, here's what I skipped. At the beginning of you make the first cut after the first day, and then Sergio made the comment.
That was Saturday.
After
the rain delay. During that rain delay, he made the
They were
comment.
Both at the top of the leaderboard, so they were going to be paired. And so since they were at the top, Sergio made the comment that Tiger wasn't the nicest guy to play with.
Right. That was on Friday during the rainout, and then they played together Saturday.
And so they played together Saturday. So what happened then was Tiger says that one of the officials told him that he can pull a club out of his bag, so his caddy went to grab it. Of course, when Tiger's around, the crowd makes noise. So since the crowd made noise while Sergio was shooting, like he was about to hit the ball, then he said that Tiger did it on purpose. Now, a few days went by, a couple of days went by where the officials who were there said that they did not tell Tiger to do it, and then the one who actually was there said, yes, he did. So Tiger was right. Tiger was not lying. The official came out a few days later saying that he did tell Tiger it was okay to move. Now, back to day two. So Sergio.
The final day. This happened Sunday when he hit it in the water.
Right. He didn't hit it until Sunday. But he complained about Tiger's taking his clubs out of the bag because he said that he thought that Tiger did it on purpose because Tiger didn't like him.
Right. That was Saturday.
So on Sunday, since they weren't paired together on Sunday, and they were still fighting for the league, people were cheering for Tiger and not for Garcia, who's a Spaniard. He's from Spain. And they weren't cheering for him. And so he thought he was treated unfairly for the whole thing. Now, to present day. With all of that being said, he kept saying things about Tiger. Tiger did not say anything about him. So I want to make this clear, because Garcia, who wants everybody to feel sorry for him, and the way the Golf Channel and everybody is making it sound, they're saying that it's a war of words. But what I want to say to you is that you're dragging Tiger into a fight when you say they were going back and forth, because they weren't. What happened was somebody took a swing at him, and he kept responding to him, but now he's blamed for it. This reminds me of how black people are treated when you're little, right? When somebody says something to you, if the white guy says, get out of here, N-word, and you say, what you say? They'll be like, you should have walked away. So they're blaming Tiger because this guy aggressively did not like Tiger and kept saying something to him prior to them playing together, after, and then wanted you to feel sorry for him like he's a victim. And he said he was a victim. So, okay, to the chicken statement. You can go for that if you want to, Finesse.
Okay.
So after.
And there's two things with that. Yeah, you know, after, like, you're right. Sergio has been saying stuff all along. So this cat is at a dinner along with the rest of the clan that was there that laughed. And, yes, I called him clan because they all laughed when Sergio was asked this question about Tiger Woods coming to his house for dinner. He said he would serve Tiger Woods chicken. Everyone there laughed, and there were a lot of golfers there. That's why I called it when I was online. I called it a clan movie, a clan meeting without the cat, without the mask. Because when you laugh at something like that, and you know, and you're golfers, and you know, that's messed up. And Sergio apologized, but there's no need to apologize because you said what you said and you meant it. Only because your sponsors came out and said something. And I got to give props to Tiger because Tiger still looked out for this cat. Anyways, by deadening issues and also basically saying he ain't mad at Sergio with something that shouldn't have been said, and we just move on, he accepted the apology in a roundabout way and then moved on. And this cat still, Sergio, still is talking about this and still going on and on. You got to face the repercussions for what you said, but it's nobody else's fault. And there needs to be something said, done this to Sergio, because he knew exactly what he was saying. He was around when wasn't Nick Faldo? I forgot the guy's name.
No, it was Fuzzy Zeller.
Fuzzy Zeller.
Oh yeah, Fuzzy Zeller.
Fuzzy Zeller said his thing. Everyone was around for that. So this is nothing new. He knew what that reference was. He was trying to get Tiger in underneath Tiger's skin. Now, me personally, if I was Tiger, I wait till I see him in person. And then I give him.
He can't do that. No, Tiger is making him famous, though. See, and that's what they were actually.
I ain't saying Tiger. It was me.
Well, I think it's smart for Tiger not to say anything.
Tiger can call me too. 443-555-1234.
Oh, here we go. No, don't call for that. But you can write him at Black on Black Crime, and we'll delete it. But anyway. Here's the thing. Tiger Woods did the right thing because he's using Tiger to get famous. Now, he's almost like, what is that guy, Skip Bayless, to me? Remember he was talking about LeBron has daddy issues and all this other stuff. Like, he was saying he was Howard Cosell to LeBron James. He's motivating LeBron James. This dude is trying to get famous off of the famous black guy by criticizing him. This is no new trick. Muhammad Ali, by the way, used Howard Cosell. See, that was a different time.
He was with Malcolm. Try to use him. Exactly.
Well, Howard Cosell was on TV, and you know there was like two networks at the time. No, there was three networks at the time. So, you know, it was like you make a spectacle out of that. It's almost like any boxer making a spectacle before the fight. Don King saying only in America getting you to come watch a fight. So I think that was clever by Ali doing that. Now, for anybody just saying that they want to criticize LeBron just because it's going to make him better has lost their mind, and they think that they have major, major oppression issues. Anybody who says, if you're white, now listen to me really clearly, this is not a black-on-black crime, and I don't care if it is. You do not make black people by you blessing them, by critiquing them. That is not your issue in life. To say, let me help this poor little Negro because I can – he's making himself famous. So this guy, Garcia, was doing the same thing. And they kind of acknowledged that even while they were reporting. I was watching on the Golf Channel where they were just pretty much saying he is bringing a lot of publicity to himself, and now how he's handling it is saying that he feels unfairly treated by the media. He didn't have to say nothing about Tiger Woods. He know the media is following Tiger. So every time he says something about Tiger, people are going to talk about it.
And he knew that. That's the whole thing. It was calculated. He knew what he was saying. And if the PGA doesn't do anything, you know, it'll be a shame because he needs to be suspended. I was going to say we boycott, but they don't care because people are still going to watch and hate.
They don't care. Exactly. They pretty much don't let Tiger in most golf courses. But here's the thing. If you want to check this out, just go to check it on YouTube. Joy the Jury. Cognitive dissonance is what the issue is. When you can actually sit there and ignore the race issue that is happening right in front of your eyes, you have cognitive dissonance. That means that pretty much that you are scared to deal with what is right in front of you. Nobody
right.
likes to talk about race.
In effect, you're complicit with the crime.
Exactly. Yeah.
Here's the thing that got me more than anything. To hear black people telling Tiger to get over it or other people to get over it is ridiculous. There was a professor on Facebook who says, well, mm-hmm. Tiger doesn't relate to his blackness and bringing up Tiger's past. That has absolutely nothing to do with it. And when something like this happens, you have to – I know, that's what – and I wanted to bring that up so people knew that's the whole point why you was bringing that up. You can't let people get away with this. You just can't sit by and say, okay, well, you know, we're in a new era, is this and that. No. Things as much as they seem to change, they haven't changed.
Were you reading one of those critical online black think tank websites? I was about to call somebody out. I was about to create a black-on-black cry. But I pulled back from it. See how that goes, Vanessa? You can pull back, man. So anyway, you know how people get overly critical on black people?
did you
read it over there?
No, I didn't read it.
I said, I was just showing you how to pull back from it because I could have just called somebody out. I was about to, but I just didn't do it right now.
There's a difference between you and I. I enjoy getting black.
Yeah, see, you know what? I don't know. Vanessa need to be locked up. That's all he's telling us in this public service announcement. All right. So in our next story, One Village Entertainment, Robert L. Johnson, RLJ Entertainment, your boy, has announced that they will release the film. I want My Name Back on DVD and on digital download on June 11th. Now, I Want My Name Back centers around Master G and Wonder Mike of the original Sugar Hill Gang, who 30 years ago, after their historic recording of Rapper's Delight and all of that, have come back to reclaim their identities and their rightful place in hip-hop history, as it's described, as the classic label versus the artist battle story. It's what this documentary is about. Now, the film is said to give the audience an honest look inside of the origins of the trials and tribulations of the original Sugar Hill Gang. They found out that they were being taken for a ride by unscrupulous record company stealing their money and their name. They actually had people appear on stage as them, and they took their names. They didn't know about it.
Well, I know this history. Sugar Hill Gang was never their name. They made it what it is, but it was never their name. Now, everything else they talk about is true, but except for the name. What's the name of this documentary? What's the name of this film?
I Want My Name Back. I think they went on stage as them, though, because they sued them for using their actual names, not the group name, because, you know, you signed that to the record company. I think they said one of the record company executives went on stage as Master G, or Wonder Mike, one of them. I was like, ooh. Now, that's just wrong. By the way, if you want that DVD, it's on sale for $14.95.
And that is true. But if these guys didn't see, this is the thing, man. If you don't copyright stuff and at that time, SB, no one knew. You know how much money
Nobody.
I blew. You know how much money I blew. was it, a couple of years, all I did was DJ. You couldn't tell me nothing.
Yeah.
No one knew that this was gonna blow like this. No one was coming telling us you need to invest. No one told us about making headphones. We didn't know any of that. Only thing we knew was
exactly.
It was now. And we was
now, I heard my record on the radio.
And I heard our record on the radio. We was DJing clubs. I got to do some things that I never got to do and meet people, but no one told me to invest and put my money up.
Nobody thought it was going to last that long. I mean,
no,
it just kind of, in their case, they're just saying in this documentary that they were replaced without, like somebody else wanted the fame of it since you didn't really know who they were as individuals. When they were replaced, people were going on stage as them. Because you know how the rap goes. I am one to Mike, and I like to say hello. Like, you can't go on saying that rap.
The red to the right, the red and the brown, the purple and yellow. The first thing I got
That was my favorite part.
You know,
I bust you up with my.
Okay, wait.
No,
right,
no, no,
so, here you go. Because, you know, we can. We can't.
That's blow fly,
all right.
Man.
No, it's not. You don't want me to say the line. I know the Sugar Hill record.
Don't say
like the
line.
My hand. Okay.
Don't say the line. Don't say the line because I can play it, but don't say the line. All right. So.
Go do it.
Final
go do it.
Okay. Okay. Now, Pam Grier, I didn't mute anybody, by the way. Pam Grier, her film is going out on Blu-ray, on DVD, and I guess I want you guys to guess which one of those are going on. Now, none of them from the Blaxploitation
Foxy
is on Blu-ray, by the way. This
Foxy
is going to be, yeah, it's
Foxy
Brown.
Oh, Jackie Brown? Oh, Foxy
no,
Brown.
No, Foxy Brown.
It's going
not,
on DVD?
Not the fake one. The one that Huggy Bear says, when she shoots him in the ear. I love this movie because it's a classic movie where your girlfriend gets beside herself after the beatdown comes. So Foxy Brown comes in after he sold her boyfriend out, right, and shoots her brother in the ear. She's kind of asking him, did you sell him out and blah, blah, blah. So after she leaves, the lighter-skinned girlfriend of Huggy Bear, see, I'm not gonna say it for this, but she goes over and she goes, who does she think
she is?
Oh,
the white girl?
Oh, see, there you go. And she's like, who does she think she is? And he says, that's my sister, and she's a whole lot of woman. That is a classic line from Foxy Brown, by the way. Now, it's restored to high definition, and it's
wow.
For the first time that they're going to have audio commentary by the director, Jack Hill. The documentary From Black to White to Blaxploitation is going to also be in there with actor Sig Haig, who speaks about his long-time friendship. It is only available in the U.K. right now, and even if you buy it online, it won't play in
the
player that's made. It won't play. Wait a minute. So for actor Fred the Hammer Williamson, Black Caesar and Three the Hard Way, they got interviews with him. Austin Stoker from Sheba Baby is going to also be in it. And
did you
they
say
have,
Austin Stoker? Oh,
you heard what I said.
Smoke.
See, now you're wrong for that. Now,
like,
anyway, that was
Chiba, y'all.
So it's coming in the UK first. So we don't know when it's going to hit America. But if you want to see that, you're going to have to buy one of those players from the UK as well, just to get it played. It's by Arrow Video, I guess is what they're called. For the Blaxploitation film, there is a photo art gallery behind the scenes and public images and trailer reels. It comes out June 24th, and it's only coming out on Arrow Video. That's Arrow Video in the UK. So if you can figure out a way to play Arrow Video in the U.S., have at it. That's the only way you're going to hear Foxy Brown. Anyway, ignore Finesse if you want to go see that movie.
You said you was about to say you had five on it. I heard you.
I was about to say we're about to take a break and get up out of here. That's what I was about to say. The music had a delay in it, so I couldn't just let it go. I'm like, all right, Vanessa's having a moment, so we got to give him this moment. All right, thanks for tuning in to Black on Black Crime. With that crazy kid Finesse, we'll use our mute button a little bit more when the commissioner's around. But brother Daniel, who's hanging out always.
Oh, yeah.
Glad to have you. All right, and Lavinia's in the chat, and I forgot to talk about that Miguel story that she said By the way, he said he's proud of his heritage, but honestly, black people are the most judgmental people in the world. Oh, we're going to blast them next week. All right. That's a black on black crime, Miguel. Just because you got a process and all that don't mean you can get away with that on the show. All right. For Finesse, it's Daniel. Hey, we'll see you again next week. All right, fellas.